Welcome to Movie Crush, a production of iHeartRadio. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Movie Crush, Monday Mini Crush Edition, John Hodgman, Part 2.
Yeah. Right after we finished recording last time, I'm like, I wish I could do this every day. And my wish came true.
Because it's another day.
It's another day in podcast land.
That's right. Noel, how you doing?
I'm doing really well, Chuck.
Hi, Noel.
Hey,
how's
John?
It going?
It's going
no,
about...
I don't know you as well as I should.
It's okay.
Where are you from?
Where am I from? Well, both of my parents were opera singers.
Wow.
I was born in Germany.
Dude, what? His mom was an opera singer in New York City.
She sang at the Met for many years.
What was her... What, is she still living or no?
She is. Her name is Sandra Walker. It still is.
Wow.
That was her stage name as well. And
The opera listeners in the audience are going insane now. I'm sure they know
it's
this
It's a very niche thing. I mean, even as famous as she was, being a famous opera singer, there's only like two or three we mortals have even heard of, like Pavarotti and maybe Marilyn Horne,
right.
Maybe
don't
a handful
say, don't
of
say the canceled guy.
Exactly. Right. No, we would never. Yeah, right. But she was a mezzo-soprano, which is not the lead. It's sort of that she always said she played witches, bitches, mothers, and maids. That was her.
I hope that was the name of her autobiography.
She's still working on it. But now she teaches voice and really, really interesting kind of retired diva type lady.
That's awesome. She still live in New York?
She lives in Augusta, Georgia, which is where we moved when I was six. After Germany, she met my dad in New York, lived there for 20 years, and then we moved to Europe and then moved to Augusta. But I grew up going to visit her in New York a lot, so I have these memories of 90s New York.
So she would live in Augusta but would then go into New York to perform.
Sublet a place for a couple months while she was on a big run.
How come Augusta, Georgia?
Because my dad was an opera singer too, and his career sort of fizzled before, you know, hers was riding high and his wasn't doing as well. So
there's
he got
an opera singer retirement home in Augusta.
Well, it's called working at a church is what it's called, because you know, classical musicians, when their career kind of fizzles, they tend to become choir directors or organists or something like that.
And despite your dad's classic dad attempt to, when his career fizzled, to bring the career of his wife down with him, she still succeeded.
No, she crushed it. And so she was always out doing that, and I would visit her for extended periods of time during the summer and stuff. So I have very fond memories of New York.
Here you are working with your voice now.
Yeah.
You have got a great voice.
Well, thank you.
He's a musician and singer, too.
Yeah, I was going to say.
He did the Movie Crush theme.
Oh, wow. Okay, got it.
It's an original Noel composition.
See, it just goes to show, ask questions, everybody. You never know.
He shall get answers.
The person sitting next to you might be the son of two famous or one famous opera singer and the man who tried to destroy her career.
Indeed. Indeed.
All right. What's going on? More things?
More things. This is Hodgman Edition Mini Crush. So
look, I have to explain why I'm here.
Well, we should talk for a minute about your book medallion status.
Well, that's not why I'm here, Chuck. I'm here because I like you. And I like Noel now that I know a little bit more about him. I was on the fence before Noel, but now I'm 100%. It does happen to be the case that my new book, Medallion Status, is coming out October 15th. Mm-hmm. And listeners, if they wish to, can pre-order it at the website bit.ly/medallionstatus. That's bit.ly/M, D, D, I, N, S, T, U, S.
Surely caps don't matter in a URL.
No, in a bit.ly URL, they absolutely do. I'm sorry.
Do they really?
Yeah. Okay. I don't know why.
All caps.
And all caps is terrible, and I shouldn't have done it. But there it is. That's where it is. That'll take you to a place where you can pre-order my new book. It's called Medallion Status: True Stories from Secret Rooms. Whereas Vacation Land, my previous book, was about vacation, this is me about all the weird jobs that I've had growing up and then as adult, including cheesemonging, traffic counting.
Monging?
Yeah, I monged a lot of cheese for a while. Literary agenting, service journalisming, ticket ripping at a movie theater.
Sure.
Coolidge Corner Movie Theater in Brookline, Massachusetts. And then the strangest job of all, being a somewhat famous minor television personality. And then it's about losing that job. And then in the absence of what little fame I had, disappearing and withering, chasing a new status, which was trying to become Diamond Medallion on Delta Airlines. Diamond Medallion Status by John Hodgman, available now for pre-order at bit.ly/medallionstatus. You can go there and go to any of your favorite online retailers, or go to indiebound.com. There's a link right there.
Yeah.
Get it from your local bookshop or pre-order at your local bookshop. Now, that's not why I'm here, Chuck. But I'm glad you gave me a chance to say all of that.
I have pre-ordered your book. I have purchased, and you have given me all your books. Like I told you, I have two copies of all your books.
Thank you very much.
Because I always want to buy one, because that's just the right thing to do.
Well, Chuck, that's why you are double famous corgi status in the medallion status universe.
Yeah, explain what that means.
So, when I asked people to pre-order the book, when I did that for Vacation Land, mm-hmm. I realized that, first of all, that's the right thing to do, because the way book sales work now, you know, having a bunch of pre-orders,
it's a big deal, right?
Having that buy-in from an audience before even the publication date really helps to launch the book successfully and ensures that it has a good life and it reaches the people that it wants to read and people talk about it and so forth. And that's why I do it. But when they scheduled the Vacation Land tour, a number of the venues required a purchase of the book from mm-hmm. a local bookseller to get into the event. And similarly with medallion status, I'm going around. You can check all this out at johnhodgman.com/tour. I'm going all around to different cities in the United States, San Francisco, Boston, San Francisco, Boston, L.A., and Austin, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
You can find them all there at johnhodgman.com/tour. And a number of them do require the purchase of the book to go.
Right.
So I don't want to punish the people who pre-ordered the book.
Yeah, and say, you can't come.
Say, and give them a disincentive to come to my event. They're my people.
They're pre-order
the book. Yeah. You're my pre-order peeps.
Yeah.
So as with Vacation Land, I am offering to people who have pre-ordered the book a special piece of exclusive merchandise,
mm-hmm.
a thank you gift from me, a status symbol, if you will.
Yes.
Everyone who comes to my book events and buys a book, whether it's the first or last time they ever buy it,
mm-hmm.
you will get a famous corgi pin. An enameled lapel pin of high quality,
yeah.
designed by the great Aaron Draplin, of either Linus the Corgi or Chompers the Corgi,
mm-hmm.
one of two famous corgis who are characters in my book. They're
real
right
corgis. Now, right?
Yeah, I'm wearing one right. Podcast listeners can probably hear.
Yeah.
This is the sound of my famous corgi pin up against the microphone.
I got to tell you, John, from a distance where I'm sitting, I thought it was Gizmo from the Gremlins movie.
Well, corgis look like gremlins.
I guess you're right.
You know, they're very adorable.
Yeah.
And that's why that's one of the things I learn in the course of Medallion Status, the book. When I go to a party that has some famous corgis from Instagram at it, they're more famous than I am. I don't understand how entertainment works anymore, but apparently if you're a corgi on Instagram, you're a star, because everyone loves a corgi.
And you also should not feed them after midnight.
Don't feed them after midnight, or they become what would be the evil gremlin equivalent of a dog?
No, I was just trying to think.
Because everyone loves dogs.
Sure.
I don't want to malign a breed of dog. So anyway, everyone who buys a book at one of my book events, whether it's an official book event or part of the upcoming Judge John Hodgman tour in November, all those dates are on the website. You buy a book, you get a famous corgi pin. But if you're a Chuck Bryant, a person who has two copies of every book, if you pre-order a book and then you buy a book at the event, you upgrade
mm-hmm.
to double corgi status. Then you get a pin that has both corgis, Linus and Chompers, on mm-hmm. it. Double corgi status. These are only going to people who come in the signing line and have two books, either two physical books.
I've got the double corgi pin in my hand. Listen to it.
Yeah, two woofs.
Mm-hmm.
Two woofs up for double corgi status.
That's right.
And only people who have two books in the signing line will upgrade to double corgi, and that can be an ebook and a hardcover. It can be two hardcovers. It can uh-huh. be two ebooks. It could be two audiobooks. The audiobook is out now, narrated by me.
Sure.
So that's just a way of thanking you and trying to incentivize you to come out to these events, because they're going to be fun. In LA, I'm in conversation with Amy Mann.
Cool.
In New York, I'm in conversation with Elizabeth Gilbert.
Nice.
In Boston, I'm in conversation with my old high school friend, Jen Dederick.
Cool.
In San Francisco, I'm in conversation with Linus the Corgi and Chompers the Corgi.
Yeah.
They're both going to be there.
I did one of those in conversation with you in Atlanta for Vacation Land.
You were
great.
It
was a lot of fun.
You were great. Unfortunately, we can't do it again because I'm coming to Atlanta in November, but that's part of the Judge John Hodgman
tour. Right. And I look forward to hearing the audiobook version voiced by John Mulaney.
Oh, what? Call back to last episode, last previously on Movie Crush Mini. Play a clip of me being jealous about John Mulaney getting to be in an animated film. All right, let's go.
He got your gig. He read your audiobook. That's not right.
No. I record my own audio.
All right, okay.
All right, guys, should we get going here with...
Yes, please.
With a segment you're going to love, John? We do something here on Movie Crush, Mini Crush, called Haiku Theater.
Ah!
And in this case, we asked the movie crushers to give haikus in an effort to stump you. You have to guess what the movie is.
Okay.
Do you follow?
Yeah, I gotcha.
All right.
Haiku, I guess the movie.
Exactly. So let's start it off with, and you know, so the movie
Rashomon.
Crushers, sometimes they just don't follow directions.
Do they?
They're supposed to say what the movie is, too, so I know.
Let's do a blind one and see if we can all guess.
All right. Well, this is one I know. Old pal Logan Kelly Troxell says this. They aren't very smart. Harry and friend Lloyd Christmas. The beer flows like wine.
That's not a haiku, though.
Sure it is. They aren't very smart. Harry and friend Lloyd Christmas. Oh. The beer flows
wine. You're right. Okay. 575. I forgot.
575.
Arendt is, she's pushing it, or he's pushing it, or they're pushing it on Arendt as being one syllable.
Yes, it is one. What do you say? Arendt?
That's two syllables.
Arendt.
Arendt.
You're in the South, buddy.
In Massachusetts.
Oh, God.
We say are not. Okay. It's Dumb and Dumber.
Oh, nice. I thought you were stumped.
No. I don't know who Lloyd Christmas is.
All right.
One of the great movie names, I would say. It's a great name for a character in a comedy.
This is from one of our oldest of pals over in Europe, Stellan Carlson, says this. Carlson? Why did I say Carlson? That's weird.
Stellan, though.
That's great.
Yeah.
He's awesome. Scolari Brothers. Rick and Annie babysit. Libby walks around.
Noel, do you have this one?
Libby?
Libby.
Who babysits?
Rick and Annie.
Adventures in Babysitting?
No.
I'm sorry. This is a callback to a previous mini course. I have not seen Adventures in Babysitting.
Sure.
Neither have I.
One of my
neither
holes.
Neither have I. Yeah. It's a hole for me.
Mm-hmm. There's babysitting in other movies. That's not the only
one. No, I know. Not really.
Don't tell mom the babysitter's dead.
Oh, I was wrong. You're right. There's another one.
Yeah.
All right, I think you guys are stumped, right?
I'm stumped. Yeah, let's answer.
Ghostbusters 2.
Oh. Those are some pretty...
That's a very deep cut. Not the movie, but the clues.
The references are very obscure.
All right.
There should have been a Vigo reference in there. I mean, you can't talk about Ghostbusters 2 without talking about Vigo.
Sorry, Stellan, they're bagging on your coup.
No. Is this Stellan Skarsgård?
No.
Carlson?
Old friend, yes. Old friend Zach Pointer says this. Two white soul brothers, four fried chickens and a Coke, band back together.
Oh, Blues Brothers.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very nice. Noel, did you know that?
I did.
Okay.
Even though I haven't seen the movie.
My favorite. All right. I just want to tell you right now. These last two movies have two of my favorite lines in movies in them.
Okay.
The Blues Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
It's when John Candy... He's been chasing the Blues Brothers,
mm-hmm.
and he's got his two henchmen with him.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, as long as they're playing the concert, let's listen.
Right.
And the waiter comes by. He goes, what do you boys want? An orange whip? Orange whip? Three orange whips.
What's an orange whip?
I think it's like an Orange Julius or something. I mean, it's just such a – did someone write that line? It's just such a moment of weird realness.
Yeah.
And he's just like, he's really into orange whips. He's like, you know, and the two guys are like, I don't want an orange whip. He goes, three orange whips.
Is that a Chicago thing? Is it a Chicago movie?
It is a Chicago movie.
Yeah.
So
it sounds like a Chicago thing.
But like an Orange
Detroit
Julius
thing.
Is that kind of like whipped up creamsicle
sure.
sweet?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
At the Varsity in Atlanta and Athens in Georgia, they call it a frosted orange.
Yeah, it's good.
I may have to go over and check out some of that.
Pretty good. It's
good.
And then in, what was the movie I couldn't get? Oh, yeah, Ghostbusters 2.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's Peter McNichol is the actor who is the
and
he's overseeing the art restoration. This is when before he becomes the monster, right? Mm-hmm. and he's overseeing the art restoration, and he's got all these assistants around him, and he's just being a jerk, classic jerk character. And he says this line that I think about all the time. He's walking amongst his employees, and he goes, "Everything you are doing is wrong."
Yes.
I just wanted you to know that.
Isn't his name Janusz?
Yeah, that's right. He had an accent.
And he
too.
Becomes like the thrall to Viggo.
Right, he becomes
the
Carpathian. A thrall. Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Everything you are doing is wrong. I just wanted you to know that. Think about it all the time.
No helpful words of advice, though. Just, you know, shut him down and walk away.
Yeah, that was what makes it funny. Mm-hmm. That was probably a written line.
Wesley Ball, old pal, says this.
Oh, I thought that was the haiku.
Childlike empress, best friend sinks in the sad swamp, the nothing is real.
The Phantom Menace.
Correct. No.
What?
Noel, you probably know this
one. I do.
What is it?
It's a movie that folks of a certain age don't think about. It's The Neverending Story.
The Neverending Story.
You said you missed it. You said it was out of...
The Neverending Story.
Famously
was that Kaja Gugu?
Well, it's Lamel from Kaja Gugu. But the music, Giorgio Moroder.
Giorgio Moroder.
Oh, wow.
Talking about it last time. Yeah, that's a movie that's definitely gotten mad about you'd.
Just for sure.
Erased from culture.
Well, no. It was just back big time because of Stranger Things. It was in a whole scene. They sing the whole song.
In season three?
In season three.
See, I didn't even see season three.
Yeah.
So now everyone thinks I'm referencing Stranger Things.
Right.
I'm not.
It's having a moment right now.
I'm referencing the Ridge.
And I think there's actually a Netflix cartoony version of The Neverending Story that just came out.
You know what I'm embarrassed about? I have not. Here we are. I won't tell you when we're recording this. But it's late in the day for
this.
I've slept on the Netflix Dark Crystal, which I hear is amazing.
I haven't seen it yet either.
I keep trying to start it. It's a little slow, but it's beautiful. I need to watch it at the right time.
This weekend, it's going to be my thing.
Yeah. Great.
Old friend Austin Handler says this. He didn't leave the movie, but I know it. New roommate ODs, found money, double crosses. It's under the floor.
The Telltale Heart by Edgar Allan Poe.
No.
Funny, because that's the plot. New roommate ODs.
Mm-hmm.
What? What's the second line?
Where is it?
Doesn't matter. I don't know.
New roommate found money, double crosses. It's under the floor. Anyone?
Is it? Is it Ewan McGregor in this?
Yes.
Oh,
is it called Shallow Grave?
Yes.
Wow.
Danny Boyle's first film.
That's right. I can't believe I got that one.
Pull that out of your ass,
Christopher Eccleston, the best Doctor Who.
That's right. Boy, did you see his recent admission?
No.
That he has struggled with anorexia and depression most of his life, and he really went through a bad anorexic phase on Doctor Who.
Is that why he left the show?
I don't know, but he's talking about it now, which is great.
Yeah. That makes sense. It's still, and I think that'll be an enduring mystery. I hope he's feeling better.
Yeah.
I was really sad when he did not come back for the... I love that John Hurt, the war doctor. I love John Hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Caligula from I, Claudius. By the way, I set up so many I, Claudius references in the last one, and you never got around to the segment where you asked me what I've been watching lately.
That's in this episode.
Oh, it is? Yeah. Okay, I was prepped for it.
I lost that one for time.
Yeah, I figured you killed it for time because I was musing too much in the last episode.
That's all right.
Well, there were 20 musing opportunities. I mean, that's a lot of musery.
That's a lot of musery.
All right. Well, don't make sure that we get to it. Tease it. Tease it. Streaming. What's the segment called?
Stream This.
I Stream. I Streamius.
Sure. We can change that up. I like it.
Yeah. Put a pin in that. I want to get back to that.
Let me see here.
Another.
All right. Christopher,
I love this game.
Christopher Paxton says this. Sweltering sunrise. Death rides a motorcycle. Who are you?
Sweltering. Is it Ghost Rider starring Nicolas Cage?
No.
Ghost Rider 2 starring Nicolas Cage?
No.
Is it Raising Arizona?
No.
That's
a good guess,
though.
That's
what I was thinking, too, because Death rides a motorcycle.
It opens with that motorcycle.
Is it a Mad Max property, perhaps?
Death rides a motorcycle. It's not...
Who are you? That's Batman, 1989 Batman.
I think I should read it like this. Not Death rides a motorcycle. It's Death rides a motorcycle. It's hard to...
What are you saying? The second line of this haiku is two sentences?
No, I see where he's going here. I'll just go ahead and tell you. Lawrence of Arabia.
Oh!
Sweltering sunrise, death. He died riding a motorcycle.
That is it. Oh, I see.
Death. Who are you?
Right. That I am... Right. Okay. And the answering line to that is, I'm Lawrence of Arabia.
Yeah, I guess so. I covered that on the show.
It's for the show, right?
Was that one of
you
your holes?
You hadn't seen it either.
Right? That's one of my holes.
It. Yep.
And we projected it at the Coolidge Corner Theater in Brookline in when they re-released it in CinemaScope or whatever.
Really something else.
It was gorgeous to look at. And I remember walking in and catching scenes, but I never sat down and watched it.
You enjoyed it, right, Chuck? You liked it a lot.
Oh, boy. It was great.
Okay.
You know whose movie that was, John? That was Chris White's.
Oh.
American film director.
I thought David Lean directed it.
You're being coy.
Cool.
All right, let's do a few more of these.
Yeah, I like this.
Yeah, this is fun, huh? We do themed ones too, themed haikus, like Kevin Bacon editions and things like that. It's
never met
fun.
Him. I've never met him.
Really? No
yeah.
Bake?
I've never met the Bake.
All right.
I you'd figure that, you know, as you read Medallion Status, I've pass actward into a lot of different weird meetings with various famous people.
Sure.
And you would think that, you know, a guy who had met George R. R. Martin and Barack Obama probably would have been one degree of separation from Kevin Bacon at this point, but no.
Easy. All right. Sammy Delco says this, and this one's funny. Some dude's lips close up. Newspapers, yada yada. It's the fucking sled.
This is a haiku that is referencing a movie that is making a reference to a movie.
No.
Well, I don't know what movie this is, but how can It's the Fucking Sled not be a reference to Citizen Kane?
That is Citizen Kane.
So the haiku is a reference to a movie that is making a reference to a movie.
Well, the haiku is about Citizen Kane. Some dude's lips.
Oh,
up.
I see. Oh, I thought It's the Fucking Sled.
Rosebud.
Right. No, yeah. I thought It's the Fucking Sled was a line from this other movie
of a
character getting so mad. Because I feel like I remember a character in a movie or a TV show going, it's the fucking sled?
Yeah, exactly. Like, that joke has been done repeatedly, I would say.
I guess so. I got faked out. Yeah.
Okay.
So it's – okay. So this is the haiku writer's own cynical take on Citizen Kane.
Yes.
That's the haiku writer saying
that's
it's
right,
the
right.
sled.
Huh. Are you just now getting this bit?
Yeah, that's right. What was the first line was lips, second line was what? Newspapers, yada, yada. Yeah. Also, he's referencing Seinfeld. This one is purposefully self-obscuring.
It felt very meta to me. I would agree with that. I would agree with that.
All right.
Because it sounds like he's referencing a Seinfeld episode where they're talking about Citizen Kane.
Right.
And Jason Alexander goes,
says,
this
it's
the fucking sled?
Yeah, that famous F-bomb episode of Seinfeld.
Yeah, I know. You don't see it very often anymore. It got mad about you.
All right, Rick DiMadero says this, Cabin in the Woods.
Yep, Cabin in the Woods is the answer.
Bing, no.
Oh.
Henrietta is angry. I'll swallow your soul.
Oh, Evil Dead 2.
Yes.
All right. He gave me, let the listener know, Chuck gave me a prompt. I was close.
A knowing look.
A knowing glance.
That's one. We were talking last time about movies you can't wait to show your kids, and my son, who is 14, is getting into horror movies, and he just walking down the street with me, he said, you know, I kind of feel like horror and comedy are two sides of the same coin.
Oh,
and
wow.
Like,
smart kid.
Yeah, of course. That's right. A lot have been written about it.
Why you slapped him in the head.
Yeah, I was like, well, yeah.
No
yeah,
shit, Sherlock.
That's not an original thought.
Hot take.
No, I said, yeah, you're absolutely right, and we have to watch Evil Dead 2.
Yeah.
Oh, because Evil Dead 1 was trying to be scary, and they realized.
Succeeding.
Well, yeah, but they also realized that people liked it more for the schlock factor than they did for it being super scary.
Yeah.
And then they leaned into that super hard for the subsequent entries, which I
don't. You know, we talked also last time about science fiction parody movies like Dark Star and
Spaceballs.
Space Pirates. Spaceballs is its own thing.
It's
beautiful. But, you know, no one had seen something like Evil Dead 2 before, where it is a straight-up horror movie and it has comedic aspects, but the comedic aspects are not winky or parodic.
Right.
It's just like, yeah, when Bruce Campbell says groovy, that's the greatest joke in the world and one of the greatest moments in cinema.
No, it's genuinely funny and genuinely horrific.
Yeah.
It's both of those things.
Right.
It's cool.
It's awesome.
All right, we'll do one more. We'll close with one of the oldest of pals in Page Admin, Vanessa Lopez.
Vanessa, hi.
Part of the Nessa squad. Combing the desert, he commands ludicrous speed. I'm my own best friend.
That's Spaceballs.
There you go.
Ludicrous Speed was the giveaway on that one.
Yeah, that's good.
Oh, combing the desert when they comb the desert.
Yeah. That's such a great
I've met Mel Brooks. Joke. I've met Mel Brooks and I haven't met Kevin Bacon.
Oh, wow.
Mel Brooks is an incredible, incredible human force.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Did you listen to Free to Be You and Me when
of
you were
course.
A kid?
Of course. Yeah.
I was trying to explain to Noel the power of that.
It was a children's record produced and performed largely by Marlo Thomas.
Mm-hmm, that was her deal.
Of sketches and songs that were sort of – and I'm feeling like it has to be late 60s, early 70s. Certainly not later than early 70s, right? Because it was around.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they're empowering
– oh, it's great.
Empowering songs and sketches for kids.
Yeah, all the right messages at a time where
right.
there weren't
– boys can have dolls.
Yeah. It's okay to cry.
It's okay to cry. That was Rosie Grier.
Yeah, it's all right to cry.
It's all right to cry. Crying takes the hurt out of you.
Ruby loves that song.
Yeah. And I want to say Mel Brooks. It was Mel Brooks and was it Joan Rivers?
No, it was Marlo Thomas did the sketch about babies.
Babies and trying to decide whether they're a boy or a girl.
Yep.
And deciding that it doesn't matter anymore.
Yep.
Really progressive.
There was one about a girl being nice to her grandmother.
Yep. Dick Cavett got in there with a little
– oh, yeah. He had a thing,
little,
didn't he?
A little poem. I've been in a room – with Dick Cavett and Mel Brooks.
At the same time?
Yeah, wow. In conversation.
Did you talk about Free to Be You and Me? Probably.
No, I forgot to even bring that up.
Oh, John.
I was standing two legends.
All right.
Where are you at, Kevin Bacon?
We're going to move on to a social studies segment, guys. Mini Crush Hodgman edition. Let's hear who you think is the best movie villain of all time.
Oh, interesting.
And why? So we'll go ahead and kick it off with old pal David Barlow says Jack Torrance from The Shining.
Mm.
It's hard to argue. That's a good one.
Mm.
Mike Ireland says Mr. Smith in The Matrix.
Mm.
That was me doing Hugo Weaving.
Mm-hmm.
Just in case anyone
didn't. Mr. Anderson, Hugo Weaving.
Old pal Maria Ursano Lawson says Alan Rickman as both Hans Gruber and the best Sheriff of Nottingham in any Robin Hood movie.
Which one was he in? Was he in which Robin Hood was
Prince
Alan
of Thieves.
Rickman in? He was in Prince of Thieves.
Yeah, the bad one. But he was the good part about it.
Yeah,
because he had a relationship with this witch character who was pretty spooky too. And they had some weird stuff going on. You didn't quite know the nature of their relationship.
It's so funny that I would have – I mean, because Rickman had such an amazing and absolutely appropriate and earned – second and third act as Snape, that I think of him as a much more contemporary actor than a Kevin Costner, for example. Like, that's really funny. I feel
Costner. Austin Handler, too.
That's
old
a voice
friend.
I cannot do an Alan Rickman impersonation. He has a weird accent.
Shoot the glass.
Mr. Potter. Like, it's, I just don't
that
know.
That was pretty good.
Yeah.
That was pretty good.
He's so great, man. Did you ever see I believe the name of the movie is Truly Madly Deeply. It's a British
great
romantic
movie.
Sad comedy in which he plays the dead boyfriend of the main character and he comes back as a ghost.
He was great in that. You know, Die Hard was his first film. He was a stage guy before that.
Yeah.
Exclusively.
Truly Madly Deeply is also a song by Savage Garden, just in case anyone was interested.
Oh, I didn't know that.
What was the new wave band we thought of yesterday? Oh, Negative Space.
Negative Space.
That's pretty good.
Good name for a new wave band.
I need to point out old friend Austin Handler also shouted out Hans Gruber.
Hans Gruber.
One of the great movie villains. Trevor Southard says Doc Ock in Spider-Man 2.
Sure.
He was great.
Yeah.
Hunter Freiberg says Anton Chigurh in No Country for Old Men.
That would be my pick.
Yeah, wow.
Completely lacking empathy.
Totally. Dead-eyed psychopath.
Yeah, and boy, that what an effective thing to use that cattle prod, or not a cattle
the
prod.
The bolt gun
as a weapon.
Terrifying.
Never had seen anything like that before. And it was so cold and just like this – it's like the quickest, simplest way to kill a cow is also the quickest, simplest way to kill a
human.
And
it leaves no trace. It leaves no slug to pull out and connect to a weapon. It just – shoots in and retracts, and then it's gone.
Yeah, it's I have to watch. I love that movie. I have not seen it since then, and I really need to revisit
so
that.
Good.
What's the most you've ever lost on a coin toss?
You just sounded like Werner Herzog.
I know it's the only voice I can do.
he sounds
a little bit like that. Though.
Yeah, he's a little Herzoggy.
Yeah,
there was a great moment a couple of weeks ago, John, where we were plugging The Mandalorian, And Noel had not seen the trailer yet.
Yeah, I haven't either.
And he's a big Werner Herzog guy, and he is in that. And I did not – I let him be surprised.
Oh, wow. And I'm surprised. I didn't – I mean, I guess I saw some internet chatter.
Oh, boy.
But I didn't know.
At the end of the trailer, you just hear the voiceover at first. Bounty hunting is a dangerous business. And Noel shrieked. In fact, Ramsey, we should drop in the sound effect now. All right, there it is.
Okay.
It's one of the best. I told Ramsey to pull that sound.
It's been dubbed by the movie Crushers the Noel Helm scream.
Yeah. So it was wonderful.
Yeah. I was genuinely, that was a genuine reaction from me.
Oh,
it
yeah.
wasn't performative.
That's great.
No, at all.
Great. I hope it's good.
So, it looks pretty cool.
It looks like it can't not be good.
Okay, good.
Can't not?
Can't not.
Daisy Christina Abreu says, Alan Arkin in Wait Until Dark. Great film.
Right. Yeah.
He was very
terrifying,
creepy.
Blind Audrey Hepburn. And he was creepy in that.
Scott Thiel says Darth Vader.
Sure. Solid.
Do you have one?
It's interesting. You know, I was drawing a real blank once you – and then when you posited this question. Mm. And then as you've been reading them out, these are all great villains. And I would have blanked on Hans Gruber. And I love Alan Rickman so much. And he is a great villain in that one because of the turn – where it's revealed like, no, we're not terrorists. We just want money.
Yeah.
And he's just...
I'm an exceptional thief.
Yeah. He's just so, you know, it's like how – what is the – there's so many different styles of villain to choose from.
Mm-hmm.
There's the villain that is just a human being who's really good at their job.
Right.
And then there are the villains who are like Darth Vader, certainly before you knew the backstory, who's just a terrifying force of evil, a monster.
Yeah.
Anton Sugar is a force of nature. Like, that's not a human being. That's what makes him terrifying is that
right.
he's not a human being the same way we are,
mm-hmm.
you know? So you know – and he's portrayed as being a wild animal basically.
Right.
You know, who happens to have speech and reasoning. And
yeah. Boy, that scene where he has the shotgun with the silencer on it and it's just sort of sitting on his lap
right.
pointed at the guy.
Yeah. No one said Hannibal Lecter because he's the hero, not the villain.
Oh, interesting. I'm sure that's in here somewhere. Sarah Stapleton.
Sarah Stapleton said it?
No. She says, hard to beat Buffalo Bill. 25 years later, I still won't park next to a van.
Sure. I mean, you think about that scene and what a piece of, what a public service announcement that was.
Yeah.
Like how many people have not been kidnapped and put into a van because of that scene? It's
yeah.
incredible.
Don't help that guy with the broken arm.
And, you
Sorry.
Know, he's like a creepy villain.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Hannibal Lecter is that point where your understanding of and sympathy for the villain is so great that you root for him.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
So that, therefore, I don't consider him a villain. And then I struck upon the one and you know, we touched upon this last time. It's controversial. But I think Midsommar is the best movie I've seen this year. And I think the best villain – one of the best villains in movies is Christian, the boyfriend from Midsommar.
Oh, that guy who can't act?
He does an amazing job acting like
you're kind of an asshole.
An entitled douche bro white dude
yeah.
who thinks that he's a good guy, but actually is a bad guy. And I don't mean bad guy like Darth Vader.
Yeah.
I mean a bad person.
Just not a quality human. It's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And ends up causing a lot of harm. So there.
Yeah.
I mean.
Hey, remember that part
I know you
of
guys
that...
got mixed feelings about that movie, but I'm not here to mix it up with you about that.
Remember that part when they all ate stuff?
What?
And had those meals?
They have some good remember dinners. That
part? If you don't, look, maybe you don't like dinner scenes as much as I do.
No, I will say this. I thought the dinner scenes were beautifully shot and demonstrated the pecking order because it used, like, it had these, like,
yeah,
overhead shots
did,
where you
over
saw.
Over and over again.
Don't see the director's cut.
There is an extended director's cut that
there
just
are extra
came out.
Dinner scenes
Kill
in the
me.
Director's cut.
Yeah, exactly.
And it is one of those rare, with great respect to Ari Aster, who made the movie. The director's cut is worse than the.
Oh, you saw it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Because I liked it so much, I immediately had to take people to see it. In theaters,
yeah,
because it's one of the most visually beautiful things I've ever seen.
I agree, and
it was gorgeous.
I think some of the psychedelic experience scenes are very, very well played out.
I've never done psychedelic drugs before, but I felt like it seemed to capture what that is as it has been described to me.
It's just done so often in a very cliche, over-the-top way, and this was very subtle, and it was much more of like a cerebral
kind of
experience.
It made me want to do drugs. You should love this movie. It made me want to do drugs, Chuck.
Did you like Hereditary?
I liked Hereditary a lot. I did not like it as much as Midsommar.
I liked it more by miles, but I need to see Hereditary again after talking to you.
Well,
I need to see Midsommar again.
David Reese, our good friend, former artisanal pencil sharpener, now my partner in a soon to be announced FX short form animated show. David Reese took me to see it, and he loved it. Mm-hmm. And I did too, and we got out of it. He was just like, wasn't that just the most amazing thing? I was like, yeah. Had you seen Rosemary's Baby? And he's like, no. And I'm like, yeah. I mean, in no way is that it's not borrowing from, it's not even an homage to Rosemary's Baby, but it's informed mm-hmm. by Rosemary's mm-hmm. Baby.
Well, so it's Hereditary. Way,
that's what I'm talking about. Hereditary.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Excuse me. Got it.
Whereas Midsommar is obviously Wicker Man. Yeah. And we talk a lot about remix culture. And I don't mean to lay this on him. Mm-hmm. It's like what he's doing. We all remix our influences, and he's created incredible works of art. For me, Rosemary's Baby is such a touchstone movie that watching this, I enjoyed it. I thought it was brilliantly directed, scary, beautifully paced. But I was like, oh, yeah, I see where this is going in a way that like.
And you didn't see where Midsommar was going because I felt like
no, I saw where Midsommar went, was going.
I felt like I knew exactly where it was going.
I felt that I knew where Midsommar was going, and I really enjoyed the journey.
You like getting there.
I enjoyed the trip, if you will.
I do.
Chuck knows what I'm talking about.
It's
a drug term.
I would. And I would like to see it again with fresh eyes. I also made the mistake of spoiling some things about it for myself before I watched it. And now that I've had a little time to separate myself from it and have talked to some people with varying opinions on it, I think I'd like to revisit it.
I think that it would be worth revisiting. It's fine with me if you don't like it, humans of the world. It's like, you know, people are different. But like The Shining, it's so visually stunning that you could just go into that movie for a cinematography pass.
Sure.
Like just ignore the words mm-hmm. and watch the pictures and it would be worthwhile. You equally could go in having seen it now for like The Shining for like a hidden clue pass because mm-hmm. so much of the story, talk about spoilers.
It's in the visual little pictograms or whatever.
Like
the first
if you go to see
thing
it,
they show you.
Yeah. If you go to see it, the first frame of the movie is a Swedish pictogram that tells the story of the movie. Mm-hmm. You're not supposed to pay attention to it because you don't know what you're looking for. But if you go in, don't look at it. Mm-hmm. Close your eyes.
Right.
Midsommar, a new movie by John Hodgman, author of Medallion Status. I wish I could say that were true. Go.
All right. We're going to finish with comment card and then a quick stream this segment. But the movie crushers have some questions for you, John. And we covered this on a social studies a few weeks ago about favorite book to movie adaptations. This is from Alyssa Johnson Wells. What is your favorite?
Oh, I feel like I just had this in mind.
Oh, yeah?
I was just talking about a movie that was better
than Country for Old Men, perhaps?
That's great. I haven't read the book, okay. though.
Well, that doesn't count then.
And I've read The Road by Cormac McCarthy, but I've not seen the movie because
great movie.
I don't want to destroy myself.
Yeah, it's tough. It's a slog.
And a pretty smart adaptation, like a very
he did a great
logical,
job, but yeah, it's brutal.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I don't know. You guys go first. Maybe I'll have an idea. Do you have a thought?
It's
right on the tip of my tongue.
I mean, certainly No Country for Old Men and The Road. Like Cormac McCarthy, we talked about it before, has a really good track record of adaptations. I also thought like A Door in the Floor was a decent adaptation of what was the name of the book? Because it wasn't Door in the Floor. It was the John Irving book. I'm totally blanking now.
Prayer for Owen Meaning was Cider House Rules. I think A Door in the Floor is what the book was called, too.
A Widow for 1 Year.
A Widow for 1 Year. Oh, yeah. Actually, my wife loved that book.
Garp was really good, a really good adaptation. The movie that I've always wanted to see.
Yeah, that's a good one, too.
Is Cavalier and Clay.
Sure.
And Yiddish Policeman's Union, because the Coen brothers were going to do that at one point.
Yiddish Policeman's Union by Michael Chabon, I would love to see as a movie. That was one where I would love to see that that constructed world.
Yeah.
Like played out. Like it,
because, not familiar with this at all.
It's a great book.
So Yiddish Policeman's Union is a alternate history murder mystery. Mm. And it is set in Alaska. But in this universe, after World War II, Jewish refugees and Jews throughout the world did not move to the new state of Israel in the Middle East. They were instead given land in Alaska.
Oh.
So this whole portion of southern Alaska is an autonomous zone within the United States that is a de facto Israel for Jews all over the world. And the world that he builds there and the alternate universe that he builds there, about what it were like if the Jewish home state were a part of Alaska and what that culture would be like and how they interact with native Alaskans is really, really interesting and fascinating. And fun.
It's a detective story is what it really is.
It's a page-turning detective story.
Yeah,
it's a murder.
Just so interesting.
And it coincides with the whole territory is going to be given back to the United States because of a treaty that has expired or whatever. And it's really a lot of fun, and that would be really interesting to see.
I know the Coen brothers optioned it at one point, but I don't know. I'm looking on Wikipedia. It says canceled film adaptation.
Yeah.
So there you have it.
He wrote Wonder Boys, which is one of your favorite pictures, Chuck.
Also another – yeah, Chabon's got a good track record.
I've, you know, as a professional muser, I'm really drawing blanks here.
Yeah. That's
but right. The ones that you want to see made into movies are the ones that have – that build unusual visual worlds, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's why you wanted to see – even though comic books are a visual medium,
mm-hmm.
you wanted to see Superman in 3D.
Yeah.
And for the longest time, even with Christopher Reeve being the greatest Superman of all time on screen,
mm-hmm.
he still looked like a dum-dum standing around in his underwear.
Yeah.
Like some things just don't translate. Do you know what
right.
I mean?
Yeah.
And, I had the misfortune of really loving a book called Winter's Tale by Mark Halperin in my 20s,
uh-huh.
which is a fantasy book set in early 20th century New York City.
Mm-hmm.
That has deep fantasy magical elements in it, but it's also this fun, rollicking history of gang warfare in early 20th century New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was Akiva Goldsman. That was Akiva Goldsman's passion project to turn that into a movie. And I was like so excited to see this flying horse in Manhattan. And then I made the mistake of watching it and it was terrible.
No good.
It just wasn't – there. You know – Taking books work for a reason because you can live inside the heads of other characters, and the stuff that sounds amazing to look at, like the stuff that you wish that you could behold, like a flying horse in Manhattan, or a giant sandworm on the planet Arrakis.
Right.
More often than not, when you actually get the chance to see them,
yeah.
it's like it's just a dude standing around in his underwear. Right. It's dumb.
All right, we'll take one more question here, and this is for you, John, from old pal Brian Bassesi. What is your favorite movie that you have been in?
Oh, hang on. I just remembered one now. Best book-to-movie translation?
Oh, okay.
Blade Runner.
Oh.
Because I tried to read Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? Not as good.
Yeah.
Okay, best movie that I was in? I have not been in a lot of movies. Obviously, I was the star of Pitch Perfect 2.
Mm-hmm.
I was the star of Baby Mama,
mm-hmm.
co-starring Tina Fey and Amy Poehler and Steve Martin, rounding out the cast.
Uh-huh. That's very kind of you to allow them
time. They're legends. You know what I mean? Like, I got to pay it back. I was the star of The Invention of Lying, a movie by Ricky Gervais.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
I was mad at you because you were in the Arthur remake.
I was the star of the Arthur remake. We finally fixed Arthur. Thank you. You're welcome. That's where I met Scott Adsit, the great comic actor.
Oh, really? Was he in? I refused to see it because Arthur was such a beloved film to me.
Yeah, I think that's fine.
He comes around here a lot. He does things at Dad's Garage.
Scott Adsit?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You should have him on the show, Scott Adsit.
I'd love to.
Yeah, he would totally. He'd be an amazing
From 30 Rock, right?
Yeah. And if you ever have a chance in the world to see Scott Adsit do improv comedy, like if you're like me, improv comedy, like you immediately run out of the room, like no thank you. But he is such a brilliant performer.
You don't like improv?
I do, but there's so much crummy improv that I was exposed to at an early age that I just have an aversion to it. I got to do better.
See, my deal is I've only seen the top-notch improv.
That's right. Chuck has saved himself from that.
I don't go
improv.
See it much. So, you know, I've seen ASCAT and I've seen Convoy and, like, I've seen the best of the best.
Same. Yeah, I've
Convoy
always had...
isn't amazing. I don't know if they're still performing together, but
they are.
Alex Ferney and those guys.
Yeah, I had Alex on not too long ago.
Oh, wow, yeah.
His movie was Out of Sight.
Oh, yeah, great movie. Mm-hmm. Great movie. Soderbergh.
Yeah.
But I think probably my favorite movie that I was in and I liked my performance the best in and actually had something to do in it and is also a great movie is Coraline by Henry Selick.
Great answer.
I have very few things to choose from. My career is just that limited in film. But I wasn't going to pick Picture Perfect too.
Done more on TV. But
Speaking of adaptation, I mean, Coraline's a fantastic adaptation.
Yeah, also a beautiful
good point.
A great and definitely like one where the visual world that you imagine does not disappoint when you put it on screen because it has been so thoroughly reimagined by the genius of Henry Selick as a designer and as an animator. I mean, it was legit stop motion animation. There's nothing like it.
How old does my daughter have to be to see that?
I think she's a little young.
It's a little scary,
right? It's a
movie. Little scary. It involves like
she doesn't
cutting
out scary.
Eyes and stuff. I mean, there's no blood or anything, but it's got some themes of like parents being replaced by evil clones.
Well,
and
that's why I mean that's why it works as a book as a story because that's a fantasy that children have both for good and for bad.
Well, and it's a
sometimes
fable.
They're afraid of it and sometimes they hope it's true.
Yeah, right. You know? I watched it recently with my mom and my daughter who is 10 and we all adored it.
Yeah. I think my daughter was 9 when it came out and we went to see it and it was just on the edge for her. But
she was eight or nine,
I think. Yeah.
Yeah, always you were talking maybe it was the last episode about letting kids watch above their pay grade and I've always done that with Ruby when I'm Googling like movies for whatever year olds.
Right.
I always Google a couple of years ahead
because
they really dumb it down on the internet when you're saying what movies can my 4-year-old watch.
Yeah, right. And you don't want to disqualify a movie that has an incredible character who's inspiring or an incredible or an incredible plot or storyline that is either historical or just interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Like kids should be exposed to great stories.
Yeah.
It's how imagination develops, you know, and engaging with great stories is an important training tool for being able to make great stories later on.
Yeah, we
and
just
so
showed
you don't want to disqualify something just because it's got a swear word in it or whatever, you know.
We just showed Ruby Annie.
Yeah.
Which was big, big deal for Emily because that was her jam as a musical theater kid.
Oh, yeah.
Sure, right.
And she was nervous, visibly nervous that Ruby would tune out or not like it.
The old one, the old school Annie.
Yeah, the 80s. Mm-hmm. And boy, she was just in like fully in 1,000%.
But I'll tell you what,
delighted both of us.
Sometimes your kids don't tune into the stuff that you tuned into.
I know, you've got to be ready for
that. At their age. And, you know, we were talking about you can't wait to show Ruby E.T.
Mm-hmm.
And we showed our kids E.T. both in succession, and they were like, nope, boring.
Really?
Boring.
Oh, shit.
But my son loves I, Claudius, which brings us to our next segment, I, Streamius.
Yes, really, really quickly, though. I just showed my daughter the made-for-TV movie version of It from the 90s.
Oh, yeah.
It scared the shit out of me when I was her age.
Yeah,
big time. Yeah. Nightmares, sleepless nights for weeks. She laughed her ass off throughout the whole thing because it just doesn't hold up at all.
Oh, really?
It's not scary. Tim Curry as the clown is goofy as hell. The acting is awful. It's just the bar has been raised for kids. You know, if they're going to get scared, it needs to be genuinely scary.
Right.
And like, you know, they're used to so much.
I just remembered what it was I was talking about with my wife about the movie that is the best adaptation of a book.
Oh.
It's The Shining.
Oh, well.
And The Shining works because it throws the book away. It takes what it wants from the book and throws the rest away.
Which is why Stephen King hates it
for that reason. And you know, the worst book to movie translation could easily be
The Shining. The other version.
That Stephen King commissioned once he got his money right.
Not good.
And it's, you know, it's obviously more faithful to the book.
It's fine.
And the acting is good. I mean, like, what a What a thankless job it would be to play Jack Torrance. Who's the actor? He was on Wings.
Was it
Tim Daly and
Weber?
Yes,
Stephen
it was.
Weber, yeah.
Why do you think there's so many Stephen King made-for-TV movies? And they're all so bad. And, you know, there's obviously a lot of...
Are there?
There's the Tommyknockers, The Shining, The Stand.
Well, they made... They got viewers.
The Golden Years.
They got viewers. I mean, that was a time when there was broadcast television.
Right.
Stephen King was a brand name. It was an event. And even though, I mean, you know, it's like, you'd be hard to find a bigger Stephen King fan than I am. But one of the things Stephen King fans understand is it's going to be a mix of good and bad.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? He is an incredible machine of imagination and great writing. Line by line, one of the greatest writers alive or dead. But, you know, sometimes you get a Tommyknockers instead of.
Or a Maximum Overdrive.
You get a Maximum, which he directed.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. He did. Yeah. Oh, boy.
Sometimes in the work, you're going to get a Tommyknockers when you're expecting a, I don't know, Bag of Bones or something.
Right.
Or, he's done so many great later works. But, you know, Cujo, his novel, is much better than the movie.
I've never read a Stephen King book.
Oh, they're great.
They are.
They're great. Read them. They're great.
They really are. Yeah.
They are. Even the less terrific ones are incredibly readable. Because one of the reasons that his... Pardon me. One of the reasons that his adaptations don't work so often or as often is that so much of the Stephen King books are interior to the characters.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets into the minds of so many different kinds of characters so authentically and then puts them into play with each other that even when you dislike them, you know what they're doing and why they're doing it. And it's unbearable.
Yeah.
You know, that's what makes them work.
Yep, I agree.
They're very interior. And so, yeah, a scary clown's a scary clown, right? But – if you don't understand the feelings that those characters are having.
Right.
And there's only so much you can do with your lines, with your words and faces.
In the book, it's an afterthought that it's a scary clown too. But in the movie, you got to lean into scary clown.
Really, really.
You know?
And I really liked it, the new It.
Yeah.
And Chapter 2, I think, is even better.
You did like Chapter 2.
I've heard
people who didn't like Chapter 2 as much.
I think it's better.
It. Okay.
I think it's better. But what I was saying to Chuck on the way over here is that the house on Niebolt Street, which is the – you know, sort of the locus of the evil, especially in the movies.
Right.
In the movie, what did you call it? Tropesville? They go real tropey on it.
Yeah, trope salad.
Yeah, it's just overplayed as such a – it's almost like it was taken out of Coraline. It's such a cartoonish version of a haunted house.
The canted angles kind of leaning,
right.
For sure. Yep.
And in the book, my memory of it was – and knowing Bangor, Maine, where it was set – You can see a regular ranch house on the corner of a street that is for some reason been abandoned for a long time, and it looks like the Brady Bunch house, but it's got a few weeds on it, and that's the scariest house of all, in my opinion.
Interesting,
and that's how Stephen King played it in the book. Much more, he grounds a really normal world and then weaves in fantastic elements, and that's what makes it so scary.
I agree.
You should read it.
That's good stuff.
Yeah, read Cujo, man. Cujo. Ooh. Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I won't go on.
All right.
I've gone on before.
So let's –
we got to save time for iStreamius.
Yeah, let's finish up with Stream This.
What have I been watching? Funny you ask, Chuck.
I, Claudius?
I've been watching I, Claudius again.
Yeah.
Famous 1976 miniseries about ancient Rome, Claudius. The stammering, stuttering, limping, like black sheep of the Roman royal family who everyone thinks is an idiot but is actually quite smart and his unlikely rise to power because the rest of Rome – is, if I may swear, a fuck-happy shit show where everyone's either having an orgy or orgy, as you might say, or poisoning the other person to get power.
Where do you stream this?
It is on the PBS app because it originally aired on Masterpiece Theater. It is also on the Acorn app.
Oh, wow. Is PBS a free app or do you just type in what your local station is, or
it's a you download it to your smart TV if it's not already on there,
and then you donate money,
and then
you get a mug.
I believe that there is a subscription fee,
okay.
And then you have to link it to your local whatever.
Got it. Okay,
but it's really worth. I mean, like, you know, PBS is great. They have a ton of old programming on PBS. It's amazing.
Yeah,
and Acorn, which I think may be how we stream it currently. Acorn started as a catalog. Where you could order like Sherlock Holmes DVDs and VHS cassettes.
I see.
The Jeremy Brett Sherlock Holmes. And now is a whole streaming service that is dedicated to the best of British television And there's a lot of really great stuff there.
Yeah.
And you can get at Acorn through your Amazon Prime, the way, you know, you can
sure add it on as a
channel. You can add it on as a channel. You can do it through PBS. But I, Claudius, 12 episodes. It was the Game of Thrones of the 1970s.
Right.
Like this whole social phenomenon where everyone was talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm recording a podcast now with our friend Elliot Kalin of the Flophouse.
Yeah.
Called iPodius, in which we recap each episode.
Is it out yet?
We're recording it now. Uh-huh. It's going to come out. It's going to drop Saturnalia 2019.
Can't wait.
On the Julian calendar.
Yeah. Big fan of the Flophouse. And Elliot Kalin.
Yeah. And, we are reading letters that we've solicited from people who have memories of I, Claudius.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're our age, mm-hmm. the memories are almost exclusively trauma. Like, I watched this with my parents.
Yeah.
And I didn't know that there was going to be this scene where John Hurt eats the baby out of his sister/wife's stomach.
Oh, good Lord. I got to see this, man.
Okay.
Yeah.
That sounds amazing.
You don't see it on camera because the production values are so low. So, like, the biggest battles are all like, did you hear about that big battle? Here's what happened. But it becomes a moment for incredible character. And the acting is the British character actors who are in this are so amazing. And if that's not enough for you to take a look at it and then listen to iPodius on Maximum Fun, another network.
Yeah.
Patrick Stewart's in it with hair.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. So it's great. Check it out.
All right, John. Thank you for joining us on Mini Crush number 2.
Thank you for having me.
Medallion status.
I wish I could do this every day.
It's fun.
But I can't because I got to go on the road telling people to upgrade to Medallion Status, the new book by John Hodgman.
When does it come out? Where can they buy it?
October 15th it comes out, Chuck, in hardcover and electronic form and audiobook narrated by me.
John Mulaney.
No, narrated by me except for two words that are spoken by John Hamm.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. He says, American Airlines.
That's great.
It's a funny book that I put a lot of work and thought and care into, and I hope that people enjoy it. It's available for pre-order now at bit.ly, that's bit.ly/medallionstatus, all one word, all capital letters. You can get it there from Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Powell's, and, of course, IndieBound. It links to IndieBound, which will link you to your local bookshop.
That's right.
Or just go into your local bookshop and check it out. We're here in Atlanta. Posman Books is right around the corner.
Acapella Books is another great
Books.
One.
We partnered with us for Vacationland.
That's right.
There are great independent bookstores right around your corner, and you will enjoy going to them. So check it out. Thank you. Medallion Status.
All right. Thanks, John. Thanks, Noel.
See you next time, folks.
Thanks, Noel.
You got it.
Goodbye, Noel, son of opera. Not only Elliot Kalin sings on a podcast. Ba 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 ba, I ran out of words. Ba 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 ba, that's the end of the thing.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.